It's hour number two of midday with Trey and BK at 11:45. It's our Hungry Dogs and Pussycats from the weekend, including the University of Houston and American Football Coaches Association making a similarly bad decision as it pertains to the Bryles family. In Tender Time at 11:30, Adam Wagner will lead us through the sports headlines that we have not already covered. And in mere minutes, we will look back at the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. In the meantime, I am Trey Elling. As I mentioned, behind the glass is Adam Wagner today. We call him Wags. And BK is live from Atlanta. Flew there on Saturday. Now he's hanging out on a buddy's patio in frigid conditions so that his friends can get their work done before they head off in about an hour to go pregame for a game that they may not even get into. And that is where we sit right now. Correct, BK?
Pretty exciting story, man. This is as professional as it gets. You know, going to Atlanta, right? We're going to cover the national championship game. Well, no, I don't make it to Radio Row or to the Fan Fest or to College Football Media Days, none of that. I'm sitting on a porch right now. I've got a view of about seven empty crystal burger packets. I'm looking over the railing to a dog park. There's a guy walking his dog. What's up, guy? Use your bag to clean that up. We've got trees. We've got a parking lot.
Hold on a second. He is not just neglecting to pick it up, is he? Because if so, I want you to yell at him right now.
I will. No, he's good right there. Okay. You're good, right? You're good? Yeah, okay. Says he's good. He has no idea what's going on. He's very confused, as am I. But, so not that, right? We don't get to Radio Row. That's fine, right? I'll go to the game. I'll give you in-depth coverage and first-person accounts of the national championship game, right? The last college football game for the next 7.5 months, unfortunately. But, I don't have a ticket to that either. So I'll probably just be watching on TV like everybody else. And I left what apparently is beautiful weather in Austin. Right?
Oh, last week so nice this ice. Weekend.
I was scraping ice off my windshield 3 days last week, which I've never had to do in my 6 years in living in Austin. And now it's like, apparently 50s and 60s in Austin. And it's like 35 degrees and raining right now here. So it's a pretty successful trip, I would say.
Well, there are a couple of people on the Specs text line offering you up suggestions on how you could maybe sneak yourself into the game. This person says, tell them to get a dolly, load it up with bags of ice, and roll through a service entrance like you own the place. That's not a bad idea. If you really want to get into the game, that might do it for you.
Yeah, boy, it's going to be tough. I mean, it's, of course, the national championship game and also the president's in town, which that security, I'm sure, is just going to be over the top and a
True.
Nightmare to get in. So it'll be tough for me to try to find my way to sneak in. But what's the worst that happens? They say no, and I get thrown in jail probably, and I don't come back to Austin ever. So maybe I probably shouldn't do that.
That doesn't.
But we give you the best coverage here. I'm telling you, man. I'm watching this bird take a crap on this guy's car. We got dead tree branches. This tree's falling right here. This guy has not mowed his lawn in weeks. You don't get this type of coverage with any other station in the country. Only here because 104.9 The Horn. We are out in Atlanta for the national championship game. This is great, man. This is top-notch stuff right here. This is Macaroni Award deserving, I would say.
Paul and Buda suggests that you need to find one of them big Alabama heifers with money, BK. I'm sure they're grazing the waffle houses of Midtown Atlanta. Make her happy, and I'm sure she'll buy you a ticket.
Is there a lot of money in this? I feel like Atlanta is probably a pretty affluent area, right?
There is.
But Alabama, though, like the state of Alabama, is it? What do we have going on over there? I feel like just I've never been to the state.
It's that old plantation
like
money, you know?
Yeah, very poor, and the drugs and RVs and the trailer parks and the hooking up with cousins and all that exciting stuff. Like I don't know anything about Alabama. I can't imagine the heifers from that state are going to do me a whole lot of good today. But I will take some Waffle House for sure.
How about this question from Bevo Lance Jason? I'm curious what you guys think about tonight's championship game having Kendrick Lamar perform at halftime. Does that mean the university's student musicians don't get to perform? It's all about the kids, right? That's according to Bevo Lance Jason.
So here's
excuse
this.
Me.
This is what I've heard. See, this is top-notch coverage right here. Apparently, Kendrick Lamar, the halftime concert, is not going to be inside the stadium.
What?
It's going to be in the Fan Fest area outside. Yeah, this is what I've been told. Now, they're going to have it on the huge circular whatever screen. that they have at the stadium itself. But apparently, the actual performance is going to be outside, which sucks for people at the game and really sucks for Kendrick Lamar because it's cold as hell out here. I know they had, like, the Chainsmokers had a concert last night, part of this fan fest type deal for the game. But apparently, it will be Kendrick Lamar outside. So I guess that means the Bama and Georgia bands will get to play on the field during halftime, I guess.
I'm glad about the second part. As for the first part, this whole process, the process of getting these huge names to perform the halftime show, whether it's the college football playoff or the Super Bowl, has officially jumped the shark now. If they're not even in the stadium for the halftime show, this whole thing needs to be reset and thought about and done differently now. And I know that Lady Gaga had that moment in last year's Super Bowl where it looked like she was starting out at the top of the stadium and jumped off to then be roped in down onto the field, which wasn't really the case. They recorded something beforehand. But this is taking that to a whole other level now, too. Yeah, that wasn't real.
Oh, ruining that for me, man. I thought that was real. I thought she jumped off the building.
Sorry, Santa Claus is also not white. I apologize for busting all
he's
sorts of childhood memories that you've had.
Oh man, he's not white either. What about the guys at the mall? Are they what's going on there?
The guys at the mall. I had to tell Vivian this over the weekend. The guy, look, Santa is a dude. The guys at the mall, that's not Santa. Those are creepy guys who dress like Santa so they can have kids sit on their laps, most of whom are screaming their heads off because they're terrified about these fake Santa Clauses mimicking the real thing and really just, living out some sort of weird fetish in the meantime.
And children know,
dude. I don't like that.
They know.
I hope so, man. I just don't like the creepy old dude who has a little kid sit on his lap. Kind of trips me out a little bit. Hey, who won the Golden Globe last night? Who got the W in that deal? Do we know?
For which award?
Is there more than one globe? There's golden.
There's a lot of Golden Globes that get passed around.
Oh, all right. Well, that conversation starter did not work. I apologize for that. Hey, what before we hit this NFL stuff, you did say in hour one, let me make sure I got this right, because I want to hit a little bit more college football. You did say you think Georgia gets the win tonight.
I do, yes.
Why? What's your reasoning behind that pick?
I think that Georgia's offense is, I'm not going to necessarily go as far as saying dynamic, because that would involve a passing game that can match what they're able to do running the football, but I think they're good enough in both facets to really cause Alabama's defense some problems, especially off of play action if they stick with the run early on, even if it's not working. But I also believe that their defense is good enough to not only stop Alabama's offense, but also to create some turnovers as well. And so for Alabama to be more one-dimensional than what Nick Saban is normally comfortable with, and the game manager that he has back there, look, we talked about it, he's not a great passer. So while he is a game manager and he makes some plays with his legs, he doesn't do a whole lot through the air. I think Georgia will find a way to really grind out through three quarters a point that gives them a chance to strike to win, and they will do so. I don't know if it's going to involve a big play. Their offense has been pretty good on big plays this year, whereas Alabama has been good about keeping those from happening. But if Georgia can keep this close early on, specifically the first quarter and a half, then I do believe that they will win the game because of it.
Okay, interesting. Low scoring game?
Yeah, you said 2017, right?
2017, yes.
20-17. That sounds close to what it'll end up being. Maybe something like a 17-14, a 14-13. I'm not expecting a ton in the way of action on offense, unfortunately. So just from a standpoint of sheer entertainment value in terms of seeing points put up on the board, I don't think we're going to get that tonight, which I know isn't going out on a very far limb. A lot of people are predicting that. But, yeah, I think this is going to end up being a huge defensive struggle / two teams trying to establish the run game.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with those keys to victory. Look, Alabama's only turned the ball over 9 times this year. That's second best in all of college football. So, if Georgia can get short fields and take advantage of that. But look, Georgia's got to be a lot better defensively. They're not going up against Baker Mayfield, of course. But look, Alabama runs the ball just about as well as any team in the country. People have been talking about Chubb and Michelle all week. Well, look, Alabama's got a top-5 rushing attack in college football. They average 260 yards a game on the ground. And Harrison Scarborough and even Jalen Hurts. Georgia gave up 200-plus yards to Rodney Anderson last week.
They did.
I mean, they were just absolutely torched on the ground. So they've got to toughen that one up a little bit, and they've got to find a way to keep Jalen Hurts in the pocket, right? The casual football fan or, you know, whatever, the football expert will always say, oh, you got to make the quarterback's life tough. You got to make them roll out and be on the run and make throws and whatever. Now, Jalen Hurts is great at that, right? This year, one of the best quarterbacks statistically in the country on the rollout. Also, 10 touchdowns, 0 interceptions on the play action. So if Bama can establish the ground game and, you know, get Jalen Hurts outside of the pocket a little bit so he can make plays with his feet and with his arm with throws on the run, then I think that's going to be the difference in the game right there. But, yeah, the turnovers are huge. I'm with you, Trey. It's going to be a low-scoring game. You can't give the other team opportunities to have short fields. Georgia forced, I think, 19 turnovers this year as a team, so they're good at the takeaway, but Alabama doesn't give the ball away a lot. We saw the huge difference, the pick six last week that Alabama had against Clemson, kind of the dagger in that one. If that type of play happens, if you let Alabama score a defensive touchdown, which they've only done that twice this year compared to like 400 times that they did last year, then I think that's where it gets away from Georgia. But if they can play a clean game, what they had, that just that one scoop and score against Oklahoma, but for the most part they protected the ball pretty well. If they can do that, then I agree with you. I think Georgia has a really good chance to win this football game. But I'm just nervous with this Jake Fromm kid, man. I'm nervous that Alabama's defense is going to do. I don't know if you can really stop Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Those dudes are unbelievable weapons. Also Swift. I mean, they're just a three-headed monster in the backfield for Georgia. But I think they'll do enough to contain those guys to where you got to put the ball into Jake Fromm's hands. And maybe in the fourth quarter he'll prove me wrong and prove you right, right? He'll make enough key plays down the stretch to let Georgia get this victory, maybe a last-few-minute touchdown. But for me, the true freshman quarterback going up against that defense, albeit a little bit shorthanded at the linebacker spot, I just think that's a little bit too much of a mountain for Georgia to overcome.
I think you're right about non-offensive points possibly helping determine the outcome of this game, BK. Whether it is a defensive score, a special team score, or maybe even either defense or special teams helping set up a short field for that team's offense. Georgia's special teams have been much improved in 2017 over 2016. We saw them help make a difference in that Oklahoma game and helping with the comeback. And as far as what Georgia did early versus OU last week, I imagine we'll see a difference in terms of this Georgia defense being more aggressive, calling more run blitzes versus sitting back on their heels. Eventually, they had to change their game plan and get more aggressive in the second half, and that obviously really helped slow that Oklahoma offense, as well as that knee that Baker Mayfield took to his ribs midway through the third quarter. He wasn't the same player after that.
No, you're right. I mean, that was the difference in the game last week, right? OU was getting whatever they wanted offensively against Georgia in the first half, and then they were held to, 150 yards in the second half, just 10 offensive points in the second half in both overtimes of that game. Georgia really really shut it down. They locked it down in the second half, and clearly Alabama's offense doesn't bring to the table what Baker Mayfield and company does for OU. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, defensive points are going to be huge. And what was amazing to me, right, is how good Alabama's offensive line played against Clemson. Now, all year long, and really the last 3 years, we've talked about how good Clemson's defensive line is. I mean, they've got 3 first-round picks on that defensive line. And, look, they got a little bit of pressure on Jalen Hurts, but for the most part, Alabama did a great job of controlling those dudes up front. Georgia's got an incredible defensive line. They obviously have the linebackers with Carter and Smith and Bellamy, those guys that everybody's been talking about. But that's just huge for me, right? If Alabama can win the battle in the trenches like they did against Clemson, then that's where this one could get out of hand. But I'm telling you, man, the vibe around these parts, the Georgia fans are not scared. They are ready for this moment. They've been waiting for this since 1980. And they've got, I don't know if this counts as history on their side, because I mentioned the Nick Saban stat against his assistant coaches, former assistant coaches. But Georgia's last title was 38 years ago in 1980, and their title before that was 38 years ago in 1942. So something about these 38, multiples of 38, that's given Georgia fans hope and confidence. But, look, I'm with you. I think this is going to come down to the final minute. And Jalen Hurts last year, he never got the chance to see the field, right? He played an incredible game against Clemson, but it was Deshaun Watson and company who had the last chance. And, of course, they scored that game-winning touchdown with 1 second to go. Jalen Hurts is getting a little bit of redemption tonight for me. And, I think that'll be enough to be the difference.
So you're going 20-17 Alabama.
20-17, Roll Tide. And, my goodness, the people say that here a lot. Alabama fans are not shy with the Roll Tides, and Georgia fans are not shy with the Go Dogs, man. It's crazy. These people out here are insane. The SEC, I don't get these folks.
All right, I'm going 17-14 Georgia. Dogs pull it out.
Very low scoring.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that is like a game-winning touchdown in the final minute or something? Or are you thinking a defensive stand for UGA at the final minutes?
I could see a late field goal, a late Blankenship field goal, maybe.
Rodrigo, four eyes.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, what a look by that kicker. Maybe leading to a 3-point lead for Georgia late, followed by their defense just shutting the door to win them a championship. But
yeah, I'm excited, man. I'm excited. 8 hours to go. It's so cold out here, but the vibe is great from this patio. Let me tell you. Feel the excitement from here.
The people letting their dogs crap at the dog park, and birds pooping on automobiles and dead trees, and the Crystal Burgers guy not being able to get into your buddy's place to try and deliver you your hamburgers. It sounds like a blast right now.
It's awesome, man. I think I just saw a drug deal too going on in this parking lot, which is great. These two dudes just keep looking up to see if I'm looking at them, and I am. I'm trying to figure out what exactly is going on, but I'll look away so I don't get shot or anything here. I don't need that. I don't need that on this trip.
Well, maybe
some pretty great live radio if I just got shot on the air, you know?
Maybe they recognize you from that trailer park party you were at on Saturday night where people were doing crystal blow in the bathroom, you know?
It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable, this place. So, all right, are we doing NFL here? I just completely stole your segment. I had to make my note card, so I'm lost out here.
All good. So the
jet lag.
The college football playoff will go down for this week in terms of our picks as the one game that we selected differently from one another. We picked chalk in the four NFL games this weekend. Saturday, it went the opposite. Sunday, it was what we all expected it to be. So where would you like to start amongst these four wild card games?
Boy, you know, some compelling storylines, I guess. Yeah, that Jags-Bills game yesterday was just rough.
Brutal.
And there were people last week saying, yeah, you'd rather spend 3 hours at the DMV than watching that football game. And I wouldn't have blamed you if you made that choice yesterday. That was rough to watch. But, boy, I guess we'll start with the first game, right? We'll go
chronological.
The Chiefs-Titans game on Saturday afternoon. Look, I thought that'd be a blowout victory. I think I said 38-14 would have been the final score there. And the Chiefs were up 21-3 at halftime. I mean, it looked to be smooth sailing. Tennessee is not a playoff team, in my opinion. Kansas City looked like they were en route to a blowout victory and getting another chance, you know, to go take on New England and Foxborough in the postseason. But I don't know what happened in the second half. Just a complete collapse by Andy Reid and company. You know, Arrowhead Stadium is supposed to be, and it is. I've been there. It's an unbelievable home field advantage, but the Chiefs have now lost, what, 6 home playoff games in a row, and they just couldn't get out of their own way in the second half. So now we've got a Titans and Patriots matchup next week, which I don't know what the line opened as, but I feel like it's got to be around 2 touchdowns. It's just the AFC playoffs this year are a dud. And for Andy Reid and company, I mean, look, he's done decent work, right? But the lack of big game success for Coach Reid continues, and Kansas City just choked against a really, really bad Tennessee team.
They did. The biggest difference in this game for me was Travis Kelce, the all-pro tight end for the Chiefs, going down just before halftime. It was on a drive where KC scored another touchdown, and you felt like that was going to be insurmountable after that. Tennessee had gotten 3 points on their previous drive, and we're hoping to hold Kansas City scoreless going into halftime, to whether it was a 14-3 deficit or perhaps 14-6 or 14-10 if they could get the ball back and get it upfield. That didn't end up happening, and it felt like, because Tennessee's offense was so listless up to that point, that there was no way that they were going to come back from 18 points down. And then they decided to put a little bit more faith in one Derrick Henry. 151 yards from scrimmage in the second half, finishes the game. It was a huge game for him. 23 rushes, 156 yards, and even though he didn't to get into the end zone himself, he was a big reason why Tennessee was able to come back in this one in the second half.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Derrick Henry. I've been saying all year, I think DeMarco Murray's getting too many touches. Dallas Cowboys fans have seen DeMarco Murray firsthand. He obviously has more skins on the wall in that backfield, but boy, Derrick Henry is the future of that position, and he was great. And for the Chiefs, what, Kansas City, the leading rusher in the NFL this year, Kareem Hunt, got only 5 carries in the second half, and they're up 21-3. You're playing with the lead, and instead of milking clock, for some reason, Andy Reid and company are putting the ball in Alex Smith's hands. And boy, that one backfired. And God, Patrick Mahomes, man, he's lurking. I know Chiefs fans are ready to make that change. And I have to imagine Alex Smith is going to be the starter going in, but with that collapse that he kind of led yesterday or on Saturday, it sort of feels like Mahomes will take over at some point next year. And we can't not mention Jeff Triplett and the officials in that game, just doing whatever they possibly could to keep Tennessee around. And how about Sean McDonough's voice cracks? I mean, my goodness, I don't know if you were watching that game with the sound on, but that dude, his voice cracks. It's like a 12-year-old boy. It's unbelievable. Too much. Every play, every big play, Derek Johnson with the return for a touchdown. It's like, dude, oh my God, just relax.
Sounded like he belonged on the midday show.
Yeah. He's people would have been taking a lot of drinks. If you drank every time McDonough had a voice crack on Saturday, you would have been blacked out by the end of the first quarter.
Yep. It was a tale of two halves for Alex Smith. Looked all world in the first half, 19-23, 231 yards, two touchdowns. But you also talked about Kareem Hunt only receiving five carries in the second half for 17 yards. Alex Smith had five completions in the second half for 33 yards. So those two things obviously balanced out. The Chiefs as a team only ran 21 plays on offense in the second half. And Marcus Mariota, for all the criticism he's received this year, and I've levied my fair share on him, especially in the last week leading up to this game, he did what it took to lead this team back to victory on Saturday in the second half of that game. And a lot of that felt like when Tennessee started speeding things up just a little bit, going more of a pace that perhaps he was more comfortable with from his college days with the Oregon Ducks, Marcus Mariota finds a way to get it done, including that absurd touchdown pass to himself, which sounded like this on the radio.
21-3 Chiefs. Third and goal from the 6 for the Titans. Mariota working out of the gun. He's got Henry to his right. Mariota with it. Looks, drifts left. Now comes back right. Looking for somewhere to go. Running at the 10. Pumps, throws, end zone. Knocked down. Caught by Mariota. And in for the touchdown. Marcus Mariota threw it. It got knocked right back to him. He caught it and dove home for the score.
The first 7 of 19 unanswered points for the Titans in the second half. They win the game. As you mentioned, BK, they face the New England Patriots in Massachusetts next Saturday at 7:15 on CBS. You can also hear that right here on the Horn, 104.9 AM, 1260, 101.9 FM. You cannot hear it on hornfm.com because we're not allowed to stream those games. However, can the Titans keep this even within 10 points? Is this going to be a double-digit victory for the Pats?
Yeah, no, look, I was wrong on my Chiefs pick. I thought the Chiefs would take care of Tennessee pretty quick, pretty easily, and they didn't. But no, this game is not going to be close. New England's going to, they're going to be up 3 touchdowns by the end of the first half, and they are not going to blow this lead. This one is going to be ugly. Take the Patriots. I don't care what the line is. Take New England. They're going to take care of business. I don't care what the ESPN article is about the rift and the beef between Brady and Belichick and Kraft. Look, Tennessee is not even a playoff team, in my opinion. I don't know how the hell they're playing into Week 2. New England's going to take care of these guys pretty quick.
The second Saturday game was the Atlanta Falcons at the Los Angeles Rams, and Atlanta, they handle it 26-13. A lot of people suspected that if there was an upset last weekend, it was going to be this game. The difference in this one, BK, two early special teams turnovers that led to points for the Falcons, and they end up persevering. They get a late Julio Jones touchdown. A lot has been made about his inability to get into the end zone this year, and they now travel to face the Eagles in Philadelphia, also on Saturday at 3:30.
Yeah, the Falcons are favored in that game against Philly. And look, the way the Eagles have looked the last few weeks without Carson Wentz, it's hard to blame. It's hard to blame Vegas and people out there for thinking Atlanta's going to get this win. Experience is huge, right? You can't coach that. You can't teach that. I thought the Rams would win, but I'm with you. That was, in my mind, the best chance of an upset on Saturday. And well, that game wasn't really close. Falcons went up 13-0 pretty early on, and the Rams cut it to 3. It was 13-10 for a little bit, but Matt Ryan, boy, respect. He played a pretty solid game, and Atlanta was really able to establish the ground game in the second half, picking up huge chunk plays on the ground. It felt like 7 or 8 yards on every first down, handing it off to Freeman or Coleman, and just disappointing for the Rams. Really a disappointment. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had such a great year. People were bought into Sean McVay, and Jared Goff had a solid year. Todd Gurley is up for the MVP. I mean, he'll probably finish top 3 or top 5 in the NFL's most valuable player this year. And that defense led by Aaron Donald, they were all so good all season long, and it just looked like the moment was a little bit too big for them. And it'll be a learning experience for the Rams, right? I don't think this is you know, the last time they'll be back in the postseason. They've got a really young core. But, man, it's got to feel like a dud. It's got to feel like a disappointment for a team that was so successful and did so much to beat the Seahawks and win the NFC West and earning themselves a home playoff game. They just laid an absolute egg on Saturday night.
Yeah, other than Aaron Donald and Robert Woods, everybody else for the Rams really underperformed, and that included Todd Gurley, who was bottled up for the most part by a very salty Falcons defense. I came away more impressed with them than what I thought I was going to be heading into that game.
Yeah, no, I agree. The Falcons, they play pretty well defensively. They got a good defense, right? Grady Jarrett up front, Adrian Claiborne, Vic Beasley. I mean, there's some talent rushing the passer. And, yeah, they did a good job. Look, I didn't think Todd Gurley got enough touches in that game, but he dropped a couple of easy screen passes. He kind of looked a little bit disinterested. Mm-hmm. And you've got to credit the Falcons. Look, I think Jared Goff's a talented quarterback. He's only going to get better, this being his second year in the league. But the reason the Rams were in this situation, the reason the Rams' offense was as good as it was because of Todd Gurley.
Yep.
And the Falcons made it a focal point to take him out of the game. And outside of, what, he had back-to-back carries for 45 yards or something in the second half. But outside of that, Atlanta did a phenomenal job of taking number 30 out of the game.
You mentioned the Jags beating the Bills 10-3 in Jacksonville the early game yesterday. Not a whole lot needs to be said about this one other than Blake Bortles finished with more rushing yards than he did passing yards. 88 rushing yards, which is a season high for him. 87 yards through the air. Yes, his legs kept drives alive at times. Leonard Fournette, he sucked for the most part, except for their one touchdown drive. But that's a game that I think we're all fine just forgetting about within the next week.
Yeah, well, anybody who was bought into Blake Bortles because of that good three-game stretch he had to start off the month of December, I think whatever Blake Bortles love was out there is completely done.
Shame on me. Shame on me for that.
Yeah, you're not the only person who kind of was bought into the Bortles hype. He had a pretty good stretch of games this year, but he showed his true colors yesterday. And Buffalo's a good defense, right? I'm not going to take anything away from what they do on that side of the football. But 87 passing yards in a home playoff game, that's inexcusable. And I know the first time the Jags and Steelers met in Pittsburgh, Jacksonville dominated. It was a blowout victory. Big Ben threw five interceptions in the Steelers' loss, but I can't imagine that happens. Just with what I saw from Blake Bortles yesterday, going into Heinz Field in the playoffs, the weather's probably going to be terrible. The Jaguars are a quarterback away from being a legit Super Bowl contender, but as long as Blake Bortles is manning the ship down there, that team is going nowhere.
Yep, Eli Manning has been rumored for a while now to join Tom Coughlin in Jacksonville. Kirk Cousins, another name to keep an eye on there. If they can get any sort of consistency out of the quarterback position, that will be a team to be reckoned with next year for sure. Jags and Steelers do face off on Sunday at noon. That's a CBS game, also right here on the Horn. And probably the most entertaining game from the weekend, the Saints and the Panthers. It was a little bit of a sluggish first half. Eventually, both teams got things going. New Orleans wins this one 31-26, despite Cam Newton's best efforts. We all talked about last week how he was going to have to carry this team on his back to really find a way to victory. He did his best effort, 349 yards through the air. Also had didn't do a lot on the ground, 3 for 37. But in the end, a combination of really Drew Brees carrying this offense because the run game didn't do a whole lot, as well as the Saints defense making plays when they had to, led to New Orleans making it to the divisional round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that was, boy, what a great atmosphere at the Superdome. I mean, that place is known for being one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL, but they were bought in. The divisional matchup, the playoffs, that was a tough place for Carolina to go get a win. And the Saints did a lot offensively, right? You know, people talk about how good Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara have been. I mean, they're both Pro Bowlers. They both had unbelievable seasons, setting all kinds of records for two guys in the same backfield. But this is still Drew Brees' team. Don't kid yourself. He's the guy with the ring. He's the leader of this bunch. And you mentioned it, Trey. Yesterday, the ground game wasn't always there for the Saints, and Drew Brees kind of took the team on his shoulders, and they got it done. And they didn't have a whole lot of trouble moving the ball in the first half. They took a pretty big lead into halftime and never really looked back. But I will credit Cam Newton, right? He's had an up-and-down career. You know, he's won an MVP, but a lot of people are still kind of doubting what he brings to the table. And we talked about it last week, Trey. Look, Cam Newton's numbers against good teams this year, against playoff-quality competition, is not very good. He was pretty bad against good teams. He really showed out, almost led that comeback effort yesterday, despite probably being concussed at some point in the fourth quarter. But he played really, really well. And you're right, that was by far the most entertaining game of the weekend. the two best teams playing on weekend one. And boy, that that Saints Vikings game next week in Minnesota, that's that might be for a trip to the Super Bowl right there. That's going to be a hell of a contest.
I think our guy Jason Tebow, yeah, he's a biased Falcons fan. I think he may have been accurate in his prediction last week that if Atlanta can find a way past the LA Rams, they have an achievable route to get themselves back to the Super Bowl as well. You mentioned that they are favorites in Philly right now, but whoever wins the Minnesota New Orleans game, I think they will have a difficult task in front of them in terms of beating those Falcons. New Orleans and Minnesota do play Sunday at 3:40. All right, that's it for our look around the NFL playoffs. Coming up next, we will read some of your text on the Specs text line 337-3776, as well as get to Tinder Time with our boy Wags behind the glass. You're listening to Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn.
There's blackjack and poker and the roulette wheel. A fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel. Viva!
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK, Brad Kellner live from Atlanta. It is not hot Atlanta right now. It is cold Atlanta, barely above freezing, but with that humidity, as we've gone over, now on this show, also the afternoon show, I get mocked for it. It makes Kevin believe that deep down I wanted to be a weather person way back in the day. That's not the case. I just understand what humidity does to the temperature when it's below dew point. It's below dew point there right now, so it's making 35 degrees probably feel something closer to 20. Is that correct, Brad?
Oh, it's cold, and I don't know what any of those words mean. I don't know what dew point means, but it's cold as hell. That I can tell you. And what you're saying, weather person? You can't say weather man anymore. What is this? Is this a 2018 bit?
Well, normally I say weather guesser. I was just inside my own head at that point, so I just went with weather person versus weatherman.
All right, will you tell me, what's the weather in Austin? Will you tell me what I'm going to come back to in a couple of days?
The Troy Kimmel official exclusive Austin Radio Network.
Oh, it's exclusive. Nobody else gets it unless you Google it.
Forecast. A lot of sunshine today. I'm looking outside these windows right now, BK, and there is not a cloud in the sky. It is supposed to stay sunny all day and a high of 65 degrees. Tonight, a low of 40. Tomorrow, a lot more sunshine, high of 66. So hopefully by the time you get back in town, well, it'll be dark by then, but hopefully it'll be closer to the 60s than it is the 30s or 20s that you're dealing with.
I'm going to be so sick when we get back. I can already tell. I was probably sick when I left, to the point where on Saturday morning I was debating not even making this trip, just eating the cost of the flights, and that was it. And I'm just sitting outside right now. I've been drinking a lot. I've been not sleeping a lot. It's just a rough combination. I'm just due to get deathly ill for a couple of weeks. It's going to be rough. It's coming.
It's funny you said that, because I'm just looking at my phone right now for the text messages that I've received in the last, let's see, 37 minutes going back to you apologizing for it not being your best show, which I haven't sensed that at all, which maybe speaks to just how terrible a show I do on a daily basis. But 6 minutes ago, my wife texted me asking if you were sick. Well, honey, yeah. If he's not sick yet, he soon will be.
Oh, yeah. No, my voice just sounds terrible. There's all kinds of stuff going on in there, and I didn't go to bed till 4 o'clock, like Eastern time or Central time or whatever. Is it daylight savings? I don't know what any of those terms mean. It's cold as hell. I'm tired, and I'm about to be just standing outside. I mean, you got to tailgate outside for one of these games. So I'm about to be outside for the next, I don't know, 6-7 hours. And then if I can't find a way into the stadium, I'll probably be watching the game outside too. So
I did hear the voice.
I'm not prepared.
I heard the voice at the start of the show. I just assumed that was you having awakened like an hour before that and really not gotten your day going just yet. But you're saying it is more sickness than you just being a little bit hungover or tired.
It's a combination of all of the above, all the negative things that happen in life I have going to me right now.
All right.
But it's cool, man. It's a beautiful view that I've got right here. I'm loving this porch. I might just stay here forever.
Somebody's asking on the Specs text line why Texas never passes the ball to Mo Bamba. We are going to get to that a little bit later in the show. Right now, though, it is Tinder Time. Tinder Time is sponsored.
Oh, yeah, I can read my sponsor, Altstadt Brewery, Altstadt Beer, German beer made here, and by here I mean where you guys are, not where I am, but it's brewed in Fredericksburg, right in the heart of the Texas Hill Country. It's the best beer you could find in Central Texas. I would do anything for a six-pack of Altstadt beer right now to try to warm me up. Bring in the new year the right way, though, with friends, with family, and with some Altstadt beer. Altstadt, no impurities, no regrets, Trey.
All right, Mr. Wagner, what is the first sports headline in today's Tinder Time?
Jaguars, Yannick I'm going to butcher this. Nagakue?
Be careful. Be careful.
I'm telling you. Nagakue. Yannick Nagakue.
I think it's Yannick Ngakwe or something.
Ngakwe. There it is, BK. There it is. All right. Accuses Richie Incognito of using racial slurs.
Oh, boy. Richie Incognito. I'll swipe right. It's been a while since I've heard that dude's name.
Swipe right. Wouldn't be the first time.
Would not be the first time. And it looks like it's a farce cry. It's fake news, it looks like. Because, that guy, Nagaku, or whatever you pronounce there, BK, he is reporting that, Richie Incognito was, taunting him, calling in some racial slurs during the game. But pump the brakes real quick, because Deion Dawkins, one of Incognito's teammates from the Bills, he says, just so y'all know, Incognito wasn't out there flirting racial slurs, and I'm paraphrasing here. I was right next to the man. If he would have been saying some racial slurs, I would have heard it myself. I was standing right next to y'all. Stop believing the BS on social media.
Boy, interesting. The whole Richie Incognito, was it Jonathan Martin, bullying incident? Yeah, with the Dolphins a few years ago. That was blown out of proportion and a little bit ridiculous, in my opinion. But I
remember when that was the worst.
If this was true.
Remember when that was the worst thing we had in the NFL? Was Richie Incognito for a moment?
And he's still in the league, and Jonathan Martin is not.
Right.
Correct?
Yeah, Jonathan Martin was very soft, both on the field and apparently dealing with the teammates in the locker room. I don't know. I'm going to call him Yannick N for future references, right, just to make sure nobody gets in trouble here. I don't know why you'd make something like that up. I don't really see any benefit of that, but I don't know. Maybe I should have swiped left to this one. Doesn't sound like too much of a story here.
Nope.
Yep. You have somebody accusing somebody of something, but his teammates saying that's absolutely not the case. Look, Richie Incognito is an established trash talker. He's going to say some things that might be considered borderline. That doesn't necessarily make him a racist, though, right? There's a difference in using language that is insensitive versus flat out labeling something like racist or sexist or any number of terms that can really destroy a dude's reputation. Now, Richie Incognito, he's a giant dick.
Right.
He is a huge POS in life, right?
Known for it.
So we can accept all of that without necessarily believing that that he is a flat-out racist like was being accused of him.
Oh, man. Yeah, there were a lot of college kids who would rock the Richie Incognito jerseys, man. That's the type of market that guy appeals to, I would say.
Is that right?
Frat kids. Oh, yeah. The Incognito.
Shame. That's disgusting.
Jeez.
I know. I might have considered. I cannot confirm nor deny. I do not own one.
What, did you borrow
a buddy's? Trigger. No, I never wore it.
Hey, man,
I never
this thing looks good on me, Ball.
Now that I'm hearing this story, I'm very glad that I did not put one of those jerseys on.
All right, what's up next today in Tinder Time, Adam?
Kawhi Leonard's going to miss some more games.
Ooh,
swipe right.
Yeah, I didn't hear about this. Swipe right.
All right, Leonard missed 27 games of the NBA already, and now it's reported that he has a partial tear in his left shoulder, according to Pop. So, guys, man, what's your all take? Do the Spurs, do they have what it takes? I mean, they almost seem to be a product of the system, of Pop's system. It's a plug-and-play situation there down in San Antonio. But do they have the means with the supporting role players to keep afloat here and stay in control and stay above the race for the Houston Rockets? With the Houston Rockets,
I don't know if they're going to catch the Rockets, although Houston's been really struggling lately, and now James Harden is out. Look, the Spurs will be fine. I think they're going to finish third in the West, which is where they are right now. They obviously did a good job staying afloat for the first 27 games or so without Kawhi Leonard. They were fine. They need Kawhi in the playoffs if they have any chance to beat Houston and Golden State and get to the NBA Finals. But this is a good time, I guess, to be hurt. And look, for me, I think Kawhi Leonard milked his quad injury a little bit. I'm not going to say karma. No dude ever deserves to get hurt. But I think he could have come back a lot earlier to play. And, now he's back and he has a completely different injury. So good news for Spurs fans that it's not related to that quad. Him being out a little bit will let that thing heal up closer to 100%. But nah, the Spurs will be fine, and Kawhi will be back in time to where or when it really matters.
All right, Adam, anything else in Tinder Time today?
Yes, sir. Raiders give 10-year contract to a guy who hasn't coached since 2009.
swipe right, and we are going to speak with Sam Tripoli about this on Wednesday. He is an avid Raiders fan as well as a big NBA fan and somebody who's about to have to deal with a reverse Kobayashi in life because his Oakland Raiders lost him a football bet this year. But, yeah, I'll swipe right to this one. How about you, Brad?
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm gonna miss Spider 2Y Banana and putting the ball right there in the turkey hole. I'm gonna miss that in the booth, but yeah, swipe right.
Yeah, as you guys know, Chucky is back, boys, and he's going to the Raiders. And it looks like a match made in heaven there with Mark Davis in that bowl cut. Looks like they both look like Chucky. And I don't know, you guys think that this guy can actually win again? I mean, we've seen coaches take a long tenure out of the league and then come back. Not much success. Pete Carroll had a little bit of it. Dick Vermeil has a little bit of it. You think it's going to bode well for Chucky?
This seems like a Vermeil-type situation for me. I think that if John Gruden were to have gone into the college ranks to get back into coaching, I would have been skeptical because there is that element of recruiting that he wouldn't have been familiar enough with. And while you can hire guys to really help out with that whole thing, I think that would have ended up as a failure. But in the pro game, yeah, I could see him, especially considering the pieces that he has to work with in Oakland right now between Carr and his receivers, and they'll do something different at the running back position, but also being able to build that defense around Khalil Mack. I could see him being successful with the Raiders, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? Of course, the Raiders will be moving to Vegas soon, and there are reports that the contract included Gruden to be a part of the ownership group or something. Maybe get a little stake in ownership. I'm not sure if that's still happening, but, man, 10 years is a lot of time. And I know John Gruden's kind of been a hot commodity. His name has been linked to plenty of jobs at the NFL and college levels, as you mentioned, Trey. But, man, that is a lot of time to give a coach who hasn't been in the game for a few years. Obviously, the Raiders fans love him. He was there for 3 or 4 years before taking the Tampa Bay job and leading the Bucs to a Super Bowl. But, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, Gruden was a coach down in Tampa. He wasn't winning a whole lot. He got let go for a reason. So
it's true.
Boy, I'd be shocked. It's the same with Jimbo for me. Like, I think they're great hires. They're big-time names. But I would be shocked if either one of those guys lasts all 10 years of their contract. To me, that's just too much to give a guy. But you're right, though, Trey. I mean, the Raiders do have a lot of talent. Derek Carr took a step back this year, in my opinion, but still a young, talented quarterback. You know, they've got to figure out what to do with beast mode or go find another running back out there. But a lot of talent on the outside, and especially with that defense. So, yeah, I think the Raiders have what it takes to maybe make a couple of runs. And Gruden was the biggest name out there, so it's hard to knock the hire too much.
Go ahead, Adam.
You guys said it best, man. This is a 10-year contract, $100 million. I haven't found any sort of buyout clause in this contract yet, but you got to assume that there's got to be one, right?
Even in the Jimbo Fisher contract, I feel like there are options throughout that contract that would allow the sides to come together to agree to do something differently, or one side decide. But I mean, they are being called guaranteed, so perhaps I'm incorrect about that, but you guys are both right. 10 years is a long time to commit to one person for just about anything, but especially in the profession of sports coaching, whether it's football, basketball, hockey, baseball. How long do head coaches or managers last for a decade? It's not that often, and that's the highest levels, right?
Yeah, no, it's very rare, especially in football. I mean, there's so much turnover in this league. The only guarantees are the Patriots and the Steelers, pretty much. You just look around the NFL, right? How many new playoff teams were there? Like 8 new playoff teams this year from last year. It's just tough to maintain consistency in this league. And that's what makes the NFL so great. But, yeah, I agree. 10 years is a lot. Maybe that's what John Gruden demanded. Maybe that was the only way Davis was able to get him out of the Monday Night Football booth with Mr. Voice Crack Sean McDonough himself and get him back on the sideline. So we'll see. It's a risk, but I was a little surprised they let go of Jack Del Rio, considering they gave him a 4-year extension before the season began. But like I said, and I think you're with me on this, Trey, he was the biggest name out there, and they made a splash hire, and they paid up to get him.
No doubt he was, and yeah, they're operating under the assumption that he's going to be the next Bill Belichick. We will find out. Thank you very much for leading us through Tinder Time, Wags. Coming up next, it's our Hungry Dogs and Pussycats from the weekend. It includes the University of Houston and then also the American Football Coaches Association making very terrible decisions as it pertains to Art and Kendall Briles. You're listening to Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn.
You need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah. Who let the dogs out?
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK, it is that time. We do it every Monday at around 11:45 or 11:50. It's our Hungry Dogs and Pussycats from the weekend, and it is sponsored by Tom McKay and Audio Visual Consultations, BK.
Yes, sir. AV Consultations, the best in the business. Been locally owned and operated in Central Texas since 1988. Yeah, 30 years, longer than I've been alive. And they'll take care of you, man. Just get some ideas. If you want to be like me with the four TVs in the living room, everyone should try to be like me. If you want to be like Trey, maybe get the surround sound and get it taken care of so your kids can go to sleep and you can still watch TV. You want the epic home theater, whatever. No project too big for Tom McKay and the crew at Audio Visual Consultations. 255-8678 or avconsultations.com.
All right, my first hungry dog from the weekend, BK. I'm starting in the Big 12 basketball. Because we had a couple of big-time ranked matchups this weekend on Saturday night, as a matter of fact. Oklahoma was at West Virginia. That was a 7 versus a 6. And then the Kansas Jayhawks traveled to TCU. We're all expecting the Jayhawks to finally not win a regular season Big 12 championship this year. It looks like the conference is for the taking. But kudos to the Jayhawks. They fought hard, and they beat the Horned Frogs in Fort Worth 88-84. Meanwhile, West Virginia does look like the cream of the crop in the Big 12 conference. They easily handle Oklahoma. Trey Young ended up putting up decent numbers, but he really struggled throughout that game. And for a guy who does score and assist like he does, he's had some issues with turnovers this year.
Yes, yeah, he's got the ball in his hands all the time. He's a talented player, but he does have those freshman mistakes. And, yeah, pretty good weekend of college basketball in the Big 12. Look, you can never count Kansas out. I was never too high on TCU. I said, I think last week during the show, I think there's three teams that can win this conference, and it's the three you just mentioned, West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Kansas. I got to give Texas Tech some love, though. Look, they climbed up to number 10 in the country in the newest AP poll. They're one of the few remaining unbeaten teams in this conference. They look like a force to be reckoned with Chris Beard. But, yeah, no, that's a good take. All right, I don't know if you saw this last night, Trey, but Dejon Davis of Stanford. The ending to the USC-Stanford basketball game was pretty nuts. I'm going to give that dude a dog of the week. USC hits a shot with about 3 seconds to go to take a two-point lead over Stanford on the road. The Cardinal have no timeouts. It looked like the game is over. And from about 50 feet, Dejon Davis just drains a three-pointer at the buzzer for the victory to give Stanford the victory. He had a pretty solid contest altogether. And, boy, anytime you hit a 50-point shot, I think that's worthy of a dog of the week. So tip of the cap to him in the college basketball world.
No doubt about that. What's your first pussycat from the weekend, BK?
First pussycat of the weekend, man, it's just the Buffalo Bills in general.
Yeah.
I mean, we mentioned the L.A. Rams kind of being a huge letdown. And, look, we knew Buffalo wasn't that good of a team. But to only score 3 points in a playoff game, the first time you've made the postseason since 1999, the whole Bills Mafia fan base is going nuts. You've got the team donating all these wings to Cincinnati. You've got Bills fans donating hundreds of thousands of dollars to Andy Dalton's charity, which is pretty cool. But, you know, I don't think anybody was expecting the Bills to make a run. But Blake Bortles had 87 yards passing. And the fact that the Bills couldn't score more than 10 points to get that victory, that just feels like all that excitement the Bills Mafia had for a couple of days just shattered, just gone. And, you know, who knows the next time Buffalo will make the playoffs. So the whole squad, led by Tyrod Taylor and company, they are a pussycat of the week for me.
Yeah, we talked about Tyrod Taylor and Cam Newton both being important in terms of taking their teams on their backs to try and win those playoff games over the weekend. We almost saw Cam do it in New Orleans, but there was no way Tyrod Taylor was going to be the answer for the Bills going up against that stout Jacksonville defense. And that's exactly what we saw. Even with a Shady McCoy, credit to him, by the way, a dog of the week, I guess, for really gritting it out and dealing with a serious ankle injury. Look, he didn't have his best game by far, but he still averaged nearly 4 yards a carry on the ground. Had a couple of big catches, including a huge 30-plus yarder that was called back on a, I believe it was a holding penalty by one of his wide receivers in the fourth quarter of that game. But he really came to play, unfortunately. Tyrod Taylor did not.
You know what? I'm going to give another pussycat of the week because our man Chris just sent this to us on Twitter. And it's UCF again. I mean, they have just taken this whole pretend national championship thing too far.
What they do now.
And it's now that they're selling national championship gear.
What?
They're selling 2017 national champions hats and socks and shirts. which is ridiculous. Look, we both agree the playoff system is flawed. UCF should have gotten a shot to get in, right? They should have gotten the chance to compete with the big boys. They beat Auburn, and Auburn beat both of these teams tonight. Whatever, we get that. But that's ridiculous, man. This is just embarrassing. I get that it's a marketing ploy, but to me this is childish and foolish. And I don't know who they're trying to appeal to anymore. Like, if I'm a UCF fan, I'm embarrassed. I'm staying as far away from this as possible. UCF continues to be a cat of the week.
I'm guessing a majority of that memorabilia doesn't get sold. I just hope when they end up with 80% leftover versus what they manufactured to begin with, they do send that that idiotic gear to a third world country so that kids there can
Dude,
clothe themselves.
Those kids are going to be so confused, right? I mean, they're going to get UCF championship gear, and they're going to get either Bama or Georgia championship gear. They're going to have no idea. What are we doing to our kids in the third world, man? They're not going to know who won the championship this year. It's
yeah,
terrible.
No doubt. All right, one of my pussycats from the weekend, it's two different groups, as a matter of fact. The American Football Coaches Association and also the University of Houston. Look, we all know what the Briles family is at this point, especially Art Briles. The AFCA thought it would be a good idea to have Art Briles speak at its annual convention this week from Charlotte. They did justify it at first. Eventually, the public blowback led to them canceling that appearance. Their notion was, look, people make mistakes. This is talking about how you overcome mistakes and remain focused on the task at hand. Unfortunately, the panel that Art Briles was going to be a part of was called Standing Strong / Game Management. So Standing Strong doesn't sound like admitting mistakes. It sounds like dealing with adversity and moving forward. And we still haven't heard Art Briles issue a legitimate, sincere apology to the victims of all the different atrocities that his football team committed on Baylor's campus several years back now. And then the other one, the University of Houston decides to bring Kendall Briles on as its new offensive coordinator. And I know while a lot of people are quick to jump on Major Applewhite for this happening, I'm also hearing some things behind the scenes that this is going over Major's head in terms of U of H people making decisions without the consent of the head coach. You'd have to think about this from Major's standpoint. Look, he doesn't want to soil his reputation any more than what he's already had to deal with, right? So if this is something that's going over Major's head where the powers that be of U of H are trying to pull some things, shame on you for that. If this is on Major, however, shame on Major as well. Just a terrible thing to bring Kendall Briles aboard considering just how complicit he was with that Baylor rape scandal from a couple years ago.
Yeah, agreed 100%. Nobody, Texas, the Longhorns hired a guy from, Casey Horney, who was a part of that staff. We were both pretty quick to say that that was a terrible hire. And,
yep.
And I'm with you. I don't think anybody who was employed at Baylor at the time should be able to get another job anywhere in the college football world or just college athletics or college in general, right? They're supposed to be educators of young people, turning young boys into men and girls into women. And, Baylor still has a lot of those people employed. Not so much with the football program, but just with the university itself. That tragedy went on for years there in Waco that still hasn't been fully addressed by the NCAA or the Big 12 or anybody. But, man, I'm going to stick to my prediction, man. I do think Art Briles is going to get another coaching job, which I can't stand. I hope I'm wrong with that. I know that CFL bit that he had lasted for about half a day before social media blew up. But if Kendall's getting a job and Phil Bennett's gotten jobs, I think at some point down the road, it pains me to say, but we will see Art Briles on the sideline once again. It's a joke.
Perhaps we're right. Do you have anything else in terms of dogs or cats from the weekend?
No, there's this really cute Georgia bulldog running around right now looking for a place to take a crap. So this is a pretty good way for me to sign off, I guess, with this dog taking a poop. Right here in cold Atlanta right now. It's exciting stuff.
Yeah, that's it for you today. You go have yourself some fun around Atlanta, and whether or not you get into the football game tonight, have a blast with those crazy fan bases, and hopefully we see a good one tonight, BK.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, I'll try to come back with some stories. I'll tweet out some stuff. I'll try to Facebook Live some stuff, too. We'll keep you in the loop out here.
You still have a return flight to meet somebody from the Hands team as well, and I know that even Southwest issues those blankets, so try and make that happen, if you will, please.
I will. I'm so sick right now. I feel like if I get touched, that person's also going to get the flu, but that's all right. That's not my problem. That's their problem, not mine.
There he is, Brad Kellner, live from Atlanta right now. We'll be he'll be back on the show tomorrow from 10 to noon as well. In the meantime, coming up, we're going to talk some Georgia Bulldogs football. We have a guest from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. After that, it is Shooting the Bull at 12:30, and then Crosstalk with Rod Babers at the end of the hour. You're listening to Midday with Trey, and no more BK, right here on the Horn.